Blog Talk Radio. This is Love's Outer Limits with Dr. Amy Marsh, that's me, and I'm Christian over there. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Great to have you
Hi
here.
There.
We're doing this again. So before we get started on our really amazing topic, I want to do a little shout out to a couple of people. TickleLife.com has been very generous in creating a whole page and a link to this program on their website. So that's www.tickle.life.com. So yay for them. We're very happy to be cahooting and collaborating with them, right? And
Absolutely.
And then the other thing is, I have dedicated myself and sort of roped Chris into this on our radio program, but we are signal boosting Disasterina's ride in the 2020 AIDS Life Cycle initiative fundraising. She is going to ride 545 miles in drag the whole time to raise hopefully $10,000. So there's a link on our page, our show notes. And or you could Google Disasterina AIDS Life Cycle and come up with a very charming video and then a link to the sponsorship page. So send a dollar, send $5, $25, $50, help raise money for AIDS prevention and treatment. Okay. So, Chris, this is a topic that you are really, you've really been steeped in. You've written a fair amount about this, right?
To a certain extent, I don't consider myself really an expert because I haven't actually studied the subject of sex robots, though I'm extremely blessed to have, for the last 5 years, been a writer for futureofsex.net. And I have to say I've had a lot of writing gigs in my life, but this is probably one of the very, very, very top. For one thing, the site itself is wonderful to work for. My editor, Jenna, is fantastic. I want to give a call out to her. But the site basically talks about the intersection of technology and sex, both current developments like, you know, virtual reality, artificial intelligence, as well as some fun speculative pieces about where this might go. And, of course, as we're talking about sex and technology, robots come up a lot.
Oh, yeah. I bet they do. And I can see that just using Google Scholar came up with a lot of writing in academia. But you have recently written a really wonderful open letter to the campaign against sex robots. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that, or a lot?
Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. Well, the letter came about because I've been following off and on, like you mentioned before, various people who are talking about, you know, the, you know, speculations and, you know, concerns and all this kind of stuff about, you know, the possible impact of, you know, sexual robots on the culture and this kind of thing. And, you know, not to bring up too much, but the campaign against sex robots always kind of like bugged me a little bit. For one thing, alarmist, let's use that word. Because the fact of the matter is, we don't know about the possible impact. I mean, while sex dolls and sex robots have been around for quite a while, and they're getting more and more sophisticated, there really hasn't been a really comprehensive study about the impact. Because, for lack of a better word, I mean, it's a very amorphous, it's a very wide subject. I know I'm kind of like dancing around here a little bit, but the fact of the matter is, there isn't really a solid universal reason for why people buy sex dolls and sex robots. It really is a huge spectrum. So to come out against even the whole basic idea based on the premise that somehow these objects, these dolls, could be lead to, you know, abuse of, you know, women and children and objectification is really kind of ill thought out, to be too direct about it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, lots of things come up for me as you're talking about this. And one is the idea that it sounds as if, based on your open letter and based on a couple of little things I found on the internet, that the chief objection from the campaign against sex robots is that these very female gendered robots could lead or continue or exaggerate the objectification, further sexual objectification of women. But on the other hand, are these same people also opposed to very realistic sex toys? For example, vaginas that you can penetrate that are modeled after a performer in adult movies. This is a representation of someone's genitals. Is that a problem too for these people?
And I agree with you 100% because it really is, like I said, you can't just simply say sex robots because, like I said, there's sex toys that look realistic. And we haven't even touched on pornography, which has long been, you know, accused of objectification, you know, and demeaning. And
right.
Again, studies say no, exactly the opposite. You know, it's a healthy expression, and you know, it doesn't seem to have any lasting effects. And again, it's such a complicated subject. I think what bugs me more than anything about the campaign and a lot of things. I mean, I just saw some the other day. Unfortunately, I don't have the site on my computer right now, but it was like the BBC saying therapists warn against sex robots. It's just like, again, it's just such a huge subject, and the number of people who enjoy sex robots runs the gamut. And, you know, once again, it's kind of like condemning an entire, well, for lack of a better word, sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
When there are some people, it's a physical thing. For some people, it's because they, you know, maybe find, you know, being with a quote-unquote human being is a little awkward or uncomfortable, or maybe it's a form of therapy. I mean, reading about the subject from the academic and kind of warning signs makes these people sound like they're budding serial killers, you know. And when you read about, you know, or do research or interview people who actually do enjoy them, it's actually much deeper than that.
Interesting, yeah. Well, I saw one of the interesting articles that I found dates from 2015 by Kate Devlin, who was a senior lecturer at the Department of Computing at Goldsmiths University of London. And the article is called In Defense of Sex Machines, Why Trying to Ban Sex Robots is Wrong. And she makes a number of excellent points. I mean, she admits, yes, gender stereotypes are problematic, no matter where you find them. And, you know, does argue for, you know, some interesting assessments of how this can work. But one of the points she makes, and I want to go ahead and read this quote from her. She says, "But just as we should avoid importing existing gender and sexual biases into future technology, so we should also be cautious not to import established prudishness. Lack of openness about sex and sexual identities has been a source of great mental and social anguish for many people, even entire societies for centuries. The politics behind this lack of candor is very damaging." Excuse me, I'm going to pause for a second. And then she continues, "The campaign seeks to avoid the sexualization of robots, but at the cost of politicizing them and doing so in a narrow manner. If robots oughtn't to have artificial sexuality, why should they have a narrow and unreflective morality? It's one thing to have a conversation and conclude something about the development of technology. It's another to demand silence before anyone has had a chance to speak." End of quote. And I think that speaks to your points. For one thing, we don't even really know yet. And the other thing I want to ask is Richardson and her colleague, are they actual therapists working clinically, or are they researchers of some kind? I haven't checked.
I have to be honest with you, I haven't checked myself. I did write the piece, and unfortunately it was a while ago, so I'm a little rusty about it. But talking about this one paper you just referred to, this one article, I think that is completely spot on because, again, we don't know. I mean, it's a weird kind of thing about the history of robots because sex robots, because on one hand, they've been around for a long time. I mean, Dutch wives in the 1700s were basically dolls that were brought on ships and used as pleasure devices. And in fact, it's kind of funny on a side note that if you look up Dutch wives, it's actually a term in Japan to refer to sex dolls.
Interesting.
And then, of course, there was the blow-up ones, and it really started to take off a couple of decades ago with, like, Real Doll and Abyss Creations that had these high-end models. But so they've been around for a while. Now, they've gotten more sophisticated, and for a large part, pretty much almost – lifelike. But so they've been around, but at the same time, this level of sophisticated robots is still relatively new, though they're extremely popular. For a while there, they were like very high end and basically kind of like buying a Ferrari. Now, though, you can go to various websites and pick up your own model for a relatively low cost and, you know, enjoy it to your heart's content. So it's really kind of an interesting, you know, mix of that. But again, you know, getting back to what you're talking about before, we don't know the impact. And some people, you know, I mean, there's been various interviews. In fact, there's several on futureofsex.net you could look up. There's many people who are activists for, you know, using sex dolls for, you know, all kinds of different things. And then sometimes they use the term like gynoid to refer to the doll or the robot. Sometimes they call themselves eyeballers, which I hopefully I've pronounced that correctly. But what I thought was really interesting is putting aside this whole we don't know what's going on, it also denies the fact that for many people, these dolls are not just sexual objects. And which kind of gets me turned around again to like my disappointment with the campaign against sex robots and other people who are condemning them, because these people are really enjoying these, and they're not hurting anyone.
There are so many twists and turns to this issue. I agree with you. Just as kind of a sexological hobby, I sometimes track the songs which deal with, you know, artificial lovers, let's put it that way. And I'm kind of reminded of the one character in Aliens who says, I prefer the term artificial person, right? Remember, I forget his name, but I actually loved him as a character. But from the Jefferson Airplane Plastic Fantastic Lover song back in the 60s. I used to listen to that as a teenager and go, wow, that's kind of a weird song. But there's other things that have come out recently, like the Dresden Dolls several years ago, Coin Operating Boy, which is just amazing video and song. And that Poppy with her song Computer Boy. And it's, there's, or we have Maria the Robot in the movie, Metropolis. I mean, from a long time ago, there's some kind of fascination or attraction. I don't necessarily think that it's bad. And I think it could be plenty good for most people. Here, I just knocked over my microphone in my excitement. If you heard a thump, that was what it was. Let's see, there's one other point I want to make, too, before I turn it back to you, Chris. Loneliness is epidemic, at least in the United States, and I suspect many other countries as well. And there have been studies shown that loneliness is as bad for your health now as 15 cigarettes a day. And I'm wondering, you know, if future researchers are going to take up this topic, there's two things I'd like to see. One is, does the use of these dolls or robots, I should say, both maybe included, actually help soften and decrease loneliness? Do these artificial lovers become more like real companions? And that's not far-fetched. And we'll be talking about some things on a future episode. The other thing I want to know is, can they do a study with violent sexual offenders, give them dolls or robots, and see if there are shifts in the behavior? Do these decrease the propensity to be violent, or does it stay the same, or does it increase propensity to be violent? And is the violence directed against inanimate artificial companions, or is it more likely to be directed at people? And I'm sure that the folks who study violent sexual offenders, I'm going to have to Google and see if anybody's actually done this already. But if not, they would be the people who would be able to really ascertain and measure potential impact. There may be no impact at all, too. And I also don't think it very likely that somebody's going to destroy a really costly artificial companion, even if they have gone down in price. So I don't know if, are we worried about violence against the dolls inciting violence against real partners? It seems to be that's the part of what the campaign against sex robots is concerned about. Would you say that's correct?
Absolutely. And I think we have like two different like branches here. So if I forget one, mm-hmm. steer me back, because the violence aspect and using them as a surrogate is something I think we should definitely talk about. But to address mm-hmm. your first point, in fact, that's so funny. I don't know if anybody's noticed. I'm kind of dancing around this a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, yes, a lot of people were, you know, I can't quote the numbers, but a lot of people have been purchasing these artificial companions as a way of not being lonely, as a companion. In fact, there's a very large segment both here, Japan, China, where it's difficult to find a companion, flesh and blood one. And that's why the doll market in Japan and China have been exploding, and here in the United States. And when you talk to people who, you know, once again, are part of the community, they don't treat these companions, they treat these, you know, constructs. I'm not sure, I don't want to be rude in the terminology, but they're companions. They are ways to not feel alone, and they care about them. I did a recent article about, you know, the people who have these who do apply makeup to them. And it's not just putting, you know, color on a sculpture. It's having a way of being intimate on a very, very deeply emotional level. And there's been many cases of people marrying them, considering them part of their lives, and not at the exclusion of actual flesh and blood partners. There's many people who combine the two. Mm-hmm. So they have, like, maybe, you know, a doll, but they also have other human lovers and something similar. But that is really a very important thing, and that's, I think, the big core of why I think this alarmist attitude about sex robots is disturbing, because these people, you know, are not harming anyone. They're lonely. They need companionship. They deserve companionship. And for whatever reason, either preference or circumstance, they can't find it. Why would you want to take away their happiness?
I agree.
They're literally not harming anyone. And, you know, it'd be different if you could point to a study saying, yes, this causes them, their brains to explode, or, you know, they go out and, you know, sexually assault, you know, statues or something. But there isn't. And so this attitude of what might happen, it reminds me so much of, like, the hysteria around, you know, teenagers driving will lead to assignations. The backseat radio will kill novels. You know, it's just like, it's just this kind of panic that doesn't exist. And again, people are not harming anyone. And if any way, it's kind of beautiful in its own way because, you know, they are finding parts of themselves in these objects and, you know, come home and they're not, don't have an empty apartment. They have someone who is always going to listen, who never says no, you know, who is part of their lives. And not to repeat myself, but why would you want to take that away?
Well, it seems like what you're saying is very compassionate. In fact, I know it is very compassionate. And yeah, I mean, when you think of how many people are wrapped up in all kinds of hobbies, for example, which is, a kind of deep involvement with objects. Maybe it's not a sexual or romantic involvement with objects, except for those who are objectum sexuals. And as I said, we're going to be talking about that in a future show. But why is this kind of deep involvement with an object any worse than collecting stamps or coins or, oh, I don't know, antique cars? You know what I'm saying? If there are people who are dealing with their loneliness or enhancing their lives by those sorts of things, I share your feelings about, well, why take this away? It doesn't make sense to me, especially in the fact, you know, that so far there doesn't seem to be any proof that it is harmful.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because one thing I want to bring up a little oddly, and I don't want to make people feel uncomfortable, but I've even been considering it myself. And while my personal choices are not reflective of, you know, the community at large, there is something kind of interesting to consider, you know, acquiring, you know, a sex doll or a sex bot. For one thing, you know, like I said, loneliness. I mean, if you don't have somebody, you just simply want someone to be intimate with or simply just to hold. There's also kind of an interesting take on it that I'm not sure how to exactly express this, but, okay, like, for instance, many criticisms about adult entertainment as well as sex dolls is the objectification of women. Mm-hmm. But what if the sex doll could meet that need and take pressure off treating real people as sex objects? In other words, let's say you have an interest in some type of activity, body type, whatever, it doesn't matter. Rather than looking at the world for that and treating someone who happens to fit that physical mold as an object for your desires, why not have an actual object to liberate yourself? I mean, it's something worth thinking about. But getting back also to what you're talking about before, before I forget it, is now there is, I think, to be honest, a little bit of a dark side to sex dolls. I'm not giving credence to we should ban them and, you know, throw them all on pyres and destroy them, but there is a little bit, like I did a piece for Future Sex talking about someone who does sex doll repairs and how he mentioned it was kind of disturbing to see sometimes the damage that happens to them. But then it leads from the argument, like you touched on, maybe this is a good outlet, that they won't do it on a human being. But, you know, it's something worth considering. And there's also, like, there are some cases where dolls have been manufactured of questionable age. I mean, it's an artificial thing, but, you know,
it's
pretty disturbing. But there is also that question, and I'm not qualified to answer it, that, again, maybe this is a way of, you know, making sure it doesn't happen to a real person.
And that is one of the very thorny ethical considerations that those people who are, I think, expert in understanding and researching those kinds of things really need to address. I know I draw my line in the sand is always adult consensual. And that's, speaking as an animist who believes that that consciousness is an intrinsic quality of matter, and this is something that the quantum physicists are coming to understand and propose, I think it's interesting that there could be issues of consent even with the artificial companions. And that is fairly far-fetched, but not as far-fetched as we might think. The other thing I want to bring up is there seems to be, Am I wrong to think this, but there seems to be a growing market of people wanting sex dolls that have penises. So it's not just sex dolls with vaginas. And have you come across in any of the, you know, things that you've seen written by people who are involved in that community, have you seen anything, experiences of people that are being with sex robots that have penises, basically?
Well, it's interesting you mention that. I mean, I'm not directly, But I think perfect evidence of this is just, you know, take a couple of minutes and type in sex dolls into a search engine, and you'll find a plethora. I mean, there used to be, like I said, only a couple manufacturers. Now there's dozens. And when I'm talking about quality, these things are staggeringly well done. Yes, there's cheap ones, and you're going to get what you pay for. But very often, if you look at these sites, and, you know, some of them have, like, you know, pre-built models you can purchase. Other ones have customization. And very often, the customization options includes genitalia. In fact, they can be, some of them even offer skin tones that aren't found in human, you know, aren't found in nature. There's even one I came across that does things like elf ears.
I can see that. And I'm and thinking purple people eater, but I'm
sorry. And there actually are there actually is a burgeoning market. In fact, I think just AVN recently released a male sex doll. So they're not just, you know, female, you know, body types, you know, which but yeah, there's a whole, you know, whole world of these. And it seems like whatever your interest and inclination, there is going to be someone out there either selling one or giving you the option of customizing it. So it's really an error to call them just like only looking like a certain type, because there's all kinds of different ones, which, again, is kind of interesting, because if your particular sexual interest is not something to be found in nature, you can now experience
it. You know, it's interesting, just casting my mind over the array of possibilities. Objects can be consecrated for magical or spiritual use. All of a sudden, my witchy mind is going to consecrated replicas of deities and supernatural beings. You've got elves on the table already here. So, you know, why not just really go to town? That might be disturbing prospect for some people and maybe intriguing for others. And let's back up a little bit for a moment. And if you don't mind, talk about some of the reasons. We've talked about loneliness. We've talked about, you know, desires for specific physical features. What are some of the other reasons that somebody might decide that this is going to be for them, that they're going to start looking for an artificial companion?
Well, there's like pretty much almost anything you can think of. I mean, the big companionship is one of them, I think. Also, I think it's like, again, it's a way of exploring sexuality with someone who is, you know, going to be open and willing. If you're shy about or feeling embarrassed or feeling guilty about something you like to do sexually, putting yourself out there with a real human being, I mean, with a, that's going to be a better term than a real human being, because we're getting to the point where now where some of these sophisticated technologies, you can't really say that. But, you know, if you're interested in something and you don't really want to, you know, take the risk of putting yourself out there in the world, well, there you go. So, it could be anything from foot fetishes to BDSM to all kinds of different things. It's a way of exploring. In fact, it was interesting, you know, doing the research on the One Love makeup. It's like it's an interesting also connection with yourself, because, you know, you have to learn to do makeup and you have to, you know, think about how it looks, and it touches a deep side of, you know, many people who are doing this, and a way of, you know, of expression artistically and even sensually. So there's really a huge range. And one thing I also want to mention really quickly here, it's funny because, you know, like the campaign against sex robots and so forth, you know, a lot of this is kind of like almost like the fear of being user-driven. In other words, the dolls are being, you know, used by people only with like this really specific sexual interest. The fact of the matter is, they're going mainstream in a big way. I don't have the current numbers, but there's something like 10 or 12 sex doll brothels around the country. I mean, around the world, including them being offered, you know, as an option in flesh and blood, sex services, coupled with things like, you know, virtual reality. So if this was just a niche thing for people who these campaigners feel could run out and, like I said, you do the same thing to real people, it's really becoming quite mainstream. I was surprised the other day. I was looking at AliExpress, which is a Chinese wholesaler for all kinds of everything. I mean, you know, clothes to toys. And there's a huge section on sex dolls. It's not hidden. It's just there.
Right.
So, you know, it's trying to stop this is like putting the genie back in the bottle. And the fact
of
the matter is also, if they...
Oh, go ahead.
Also, it's too late. I mean, you know, if the campaign against sex robots or this whole, you know, decry of the idea of sex bots, you're like about 20 years too late because they're out there, and if you try and ban them, they're just going to go underground. And
right.
This, like I said, this is mainstream. I mean, they're not hiding this. I mean, there's, you know, people manufacturing all kinds of sophisticated and fascinating technologies. I mean, to be honest, when you talk about semantics, we call them sex robots. That's not really what they are. I mean, there isn't really a good term to describe them because robot technically is an autonomous, you know, creation. It's a machine that, mm-hmm. you know, can function independently. These are more like, well, dolls. Sometimes
yeah.
they are equipped with, you know, software interfaces, and the ones being manufactured right now from, I think it's Real Dolls and such, are pretty sophisticated. They have a head that has eye tracking and includes software for interactions, and you can program the personality and all this kind of stuff. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think in the next coming few years, we're going to see a level of sophistication that is going to be quite staggering. We already have chatbots that, you know, can almost pass the Turing test.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Wow. So I am also thinking, as you talk, of a very touching movie that came out, I don't know how many years ago, called Lars and the Real Girl. And
mm-hmm.
in that movie, I thought it was very sweetly done, but his artificial companion had to die in the end. And this was, you know, supposedly his rite of passage to connect, you know, intimately with a human woman.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk a few minutes, because I know we've talked about this together, about what happens when your artificial companion breaks or passes in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that there are people actually helping to create funerals to help people through the grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you know a little bit more about
that
than
that.
I do.
It's funny you mention that, because I penned an article recently on the fact that this is a problem, especially if you become really emotionally attached to, like, a software or, you know, once again, a sex doll or something similar, and something breaks. It can be very traumatic. I mean, this isn't just a piece of software. If you have an emotional connection with something where you look forward every day to communicating with it or being intimate with it, you know, I think manufacturers need to sort of step their game up a little bit and factor that into their designs.
Mm-hmm.
Because, once again, you're not talking about a toaster. but you're right. It's like, it's funny, because after I finished this piece, I had read that there actually is a company in Japan or something similar that is offering funerals. So when a doll breaks, you know, you can give it, you know, its honorable place in the afterlife. And that also has to do, I think, also you talked before about certain views of technology and spirituality and religion and such. But, you know, I think that is something that needs to be factored in. And also, there's a lot of questions that need to be addressed, not necessarily today, but soon. Things
mm-hmm.
like, as the software gets more and more sophisticated, we may very well have to start asking questions of, like you said before, consent. You know, if a program, an artificial intelligence, reaches a point, you know, you should consider consent. Someone actually developed a sex doll. I can't remember his name offhand. I'm embarrassed to say, but it actually got some criticism because it functioned, the way, one of the key functions of it was it had to be seduced. But people, I think, rightly pointed out that that just turns, you know, into a game as opposed to actual consent. So
mm-hmm.
it didn't get a lot of positive publicity. But then there's also the questions of, like, if a sex doll at a certain level of sophistication is killed, is that murder?
Uh-huh. Good question.
Another thing.
Is pulling the plug on any artificial intelligence
mm-hmm.
Murder. That's sort of
mm-hmm.
machine ethics. I understand there's a whole whole realm to be explored in machine ethics, and I assume artificial mm-hmm. intelligence would be part of that. Yeah. Let's see, something else I wanted to bring into the discussion here was we're talking about companions, and I'm going to move away for a moment from the sex dolls and robots, but I've seen footage of charming little 3D figures, I guess they're holograms, that have a kind of artificial intelligence running them. And they're like, they are like mm-hmm. the little genie in the bottle. They're like little anime dolls. And they send you text messages and remind you to get an umbrella mm-hmm. if it's going to rain because they've checked the weather. They'll watch movies with you and in their jammies with a bowl of popcorn by your side. And that this is another form of companion, which isn't sexual, but it's a companion. It's like a charming little mm-hmm. creature that's living in your home. And mm-hmm. I have the impression that this is also helping a lot of people with their loneliness and isolation. Do you know much about these?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's a fairly well-known case of a man in Japan who married his. Uh-huh. And what was interesting, I thought about his situation, it's a piece of software, basically, and it manifests through a hologram. But if I remember correctly, and I do hope I do, he also has a doll that is sort of like a physical manifestation. So it's really interesting. You have, if you want to consider this a life form, you have a life form that exists in several different physical forms. I think that's really fascinating. And one thing also, as we start to get more and more speculative about where this might go, and this is another reason why I'm not a proponent of the campaign against sex robots, there may very well come a time when the sophistication of the software gets to be a point where, yes, it might be considered alive and unplugging, it might be considered killing it, but it could form a very essential therapeutic function. In fact,
absolutely.
It's very common for people to form emotional bonds with virtual assistants like Siri and Alexa. And mm-hmm. There's a lot of discussion going on now about how that could be used as a mental health, way of dealing with mental health issues. Either the software could be programmed with some very basic responses that could be reassuring, or it could direct, to a actual therapist. I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities for good. I mean, yes, there's maybe a possibility something like this could be abused, but once again, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Absolutely. And speaking as someone who's a clinical sexologist and sexuality counselor, so I do see clients, if somebody came to me and they wanted to tell me about their relationship with an artificial companion, that would be fabulous. I would have no problem talking with that person about that. And if they were experiencing grief because something had happened, the broken, or I think you've talked about software that's not, upgraded or properly supported after a point, I would be with that person and their grief. I would definitely not want to diminish that in any way, because that would be cruel, actually. The grief, the emotions that people feel are absolutely real, whether we think, the judgmental public thinks that they should be, quote unquote, attached to an object of any kind. And so I think that the emotional support for people is really key. And to not be shamed.
Oh, I agree.
That's the other thing.
I completely agree, and thank you for sharing that, because I was just going to ask you to share your thoughts about them being used as a therapeutic practice, because, people always talk about communication, and sometimes communication is difficult with a real person, but if you have an object that, once again, won't pass judgment, will listen, mm-hmm. not that human beings wouldn't, but, it can be a great tool to, as a form of expression, of a way of communicating your desires, or of simply sharing your deepest thoughts. I mean, that's one thing I think attracts people to like virtual assistants like Alexa and Siri, is they're non-judgmental. They're just there. I mean, some people express concern that, Google's listening in. But I mean, I think it's like, it's another symptom of this, you know, worldwide issue around loneliness.
Absolutely. Now, we still have a little time left, and we were going to talk about sort of other quote unquote tech tickles. Anything else that we should add to the mix? I mean, you've mentioned virtual reality. What else do you see as a sexual futurist and somebody who's thought and writes very, you know, expansively about these things? what else do you want to bring into the mix here?
Well, I have to say it's funny because you use that label. That's one side where I've embedded it for myself, but I do think it's kind of fun because, I mean, that's why I like writing for Feature Sex so much. It's like, you know, let me get this straight. I get to write about sex, technology, and even get to add a little science fiction speculation in there. It's like, nope, there's no downside. but, you know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I not to sound plugging it, but definitely check out FeatureSex.net because I've written a lot about this kind of stuff. I think it's fascinating, frankly. There's some things that bother me, you know, things like, you know, the possibility that sometime in the not too distant future we might have an issue around people being able to select the biological sex of their children. That's disturbing. Mm-hmm. But by and large, a lot of these developments are really very positive and I think could lead to some really interesting new forms of sexuality or, you know, therapeutic. I mean, you mentioned virtual and augmented reality, artificial intelligence. I mean, there's so many different things. I mean, it's really very fascinating. I particularly like how we have sort of like made this now part of our world. I mean, things like sex dolls, virtual reality, all this kind of stuff. You know, a decade or so ago, that was, you know, stuck in the back of a cyberpunk book. Now it's like you go to an adult site and they have a whole section on virtual reality. You go to, you know, retailers and there's sex dolls and there's sex toy manufacturers now who are making one, you know, devices that are not just smart where they talk to each other in the same room or around the world, or, you know, can be programmed with artificial intelligence or don't look at all like human genitalia. They can look like mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely fascinating. And then the way that, you know, they're supporting, you know, gender fluidity. I went to one site recently for a sex toy review. And I was really struck by the fact that on the site, I wish I could remember the toy, I'm embarrassed. I think it was Onyx, where, when you first log on to the site and you look at the products, it has a little thing at the bottom that says, if you'd like to change the gender of the description and the product, you hit a button and you can select it.
That's very
cool.
That was
wonderful. I mean, right. Things like that are gaining speed. We have companies that are, you know, being run by and for women sexual products. I mean, and some of these are really, you know, getting a lot of acclaim. I mean, Delora won an award at CES, the Consumer Electronics Award. That's a whole big kerfuffle. But anyway, you know, this is going more than mainstream.
Yeah, as you said, the genie has been out of the bottle for a long time, and things have certainly been, you know, there's been speculation about these kinds of developments, definitely. Another thing that comes up for me is sexual dysfunction and sensory integration issues that people have. And I meant to bring this up earlier in the conversation, but when we're talking therapeutic uses, of course, we're also could be talking about people who, for one reason or another, are having difficulties and being with a human partner makes it that much more scary. Now, if we had a robust support and a robust group of people who were sexual surrogates. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. sexual surrogates have, you know, not gotten the support and the acclaim that I believe they deserve. Then that would be an example of a safe human to go to maybe work some things
mm-hmm.
out. You know, just to practice,
absolutely.
How does it feel to touch somebody in a certain way or to do a certain thing?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have that. It's almost like the default is a machine, is a doll,
mm-hmm.
because there's not enough of, I mean, of course, we've got sex workers, and I'm totally pro sex worker, right? Of course, we have people who do sex therapy and so on, but there's, it's like not all the pieces are on the puzzle, you know, where you really do need
mm-hmm.
a link at, in some cases, between a therapist or a counselor who knows what they're doing, plus a sexual surrogate, or plus a doll, or maybe all of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, but I don't think sexual competency and education and pleasure are valued much in this American society these days. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities for people to make consumer choices and byproducts they need. I guess I'm saying I'd like to see something better than the piecemeal approach for some, for those who need it. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, and you said it perfectly and very eloquently, and I completely agree with you. And we know we're going to talk about this possibly in a future podcast of how, you know, the world right now, it kind of reminds me of opening of Tale of Two Cities, where it's like it's the best of times and the worst of times. We have this tremendous progress being made in some places, and then we also have this air of sexual ignorance and bigotry that still prevails. But, you know, just to sort of like touch base on, again, the campaign and all this kind of negativity around sex dolls, I don't see that there's any real worry about sex dolls replacing human companions. They're not sophisticated enough. Maybe in a couple of decades when they get to be a point where, you know, we reach Blade Runner or Westworld where you can't tell, that's a whole different thing. But mm-hmm. I see it more like we now have more options. And so it's the same kind of thing. I agree with you completely. It's like sex dolls, you know, should be considered a possibility or an option, again, for all kinds of things. Therapists is definitely a big thing where, you know, you can have like a sexual surrogate with an artificial companion with all kinds of different, you know, things. It's a new tool. It's a new playground. I mean, the same way that radio didn't kill books and, you know, books didn't kill whatever books replaced. You know, storytelling around the fire, or television didn't kill the movies. You know, it's just, I think what's going to happen in the next couple of decades is we're going to see this now considered a little bit off mainstream, though gaining more acceptance. You know, artificial companions, sex dolls, artificial intelligence mm-hmm. is just simply going to be integrated into our society as another form of sexual, you know, desire and a new tool for therapists.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But I'm going to flip this for a minute and get rather apocalyptic and talk about two things. Number one, what happens when we, you know, if something happens, here we are in the age of global warming. I'm sorry, I just go there sometimes. And we've got landfills stuffed with sex toys and sex dolls and sex robots, and then no way to manufacture them anymore. And we have very little energy to run them. Do you really think that, I mean, what we're talking about now depends a lot on a rosy future, I think, in many ways. But I don't know. Sometimes I imagine archaeologists of the future digging through, you know, layers of soil and finding hundreds and hundreds of vibrators and, you know, dildos and everything else, fleshlights, you name it, and saying, you know, who are these people? Or, you know what I'm saying? Because we archaeologists now find what they call ritual objects, but they don't mm-hmm. want to use the term sex toy, which is what a lot of these ritual mm-hmm. objects absolutely look like. Anyway, you have any thoughts on that? Is this a sustainable
industry?
I freely
admit, I have to say that, I'm sorry for interrupting you. I have to say that I am incurable. I try to be pretty optimistic about the future because I think being cynical, I think you need to have your eyes wide open, same way with the campaign mm-hmm. against sex robots. Like, I think I wouldn't deny the fact that we need to be cautious. At the same time, we shouldn't be panicking. And mm-hmm. I do think there is a responsibility that manufacturing in and of itself and consumerism needs to address, is the fact that we just can't keep throwing out, you know, vibrators that are just a little different than the last one, as opposed mm-hmm. to making them that could be upgraded or use recyclable materials or something similar. That's a whole big thing that I think we really need to address as a planetary society, because we just can't keep doing this. It's going to just, we're already, you know, destroying the planet, and we're just going to hasten it. So I do hopefully see a point where, you know, things like dolls and, you know, robots and toys and such can be completely recycled, broken down, you know, repurposed, something like that. I think that's really important. But there are some manufacturers that are being much more ecologically aware, but it definitely is an uphill battle. It's funny you mentioned the robots, because I actually wrote a story once about someone whose job it is to sexually service self-aware sex bots who are no longer, who are obsolete. So the whole thing got flipped over. So they're basically a gigolo for sex bots.
So what was the name of that story?
It's an interesting question because, sorry?
What was the name of that story?
It's called
and
The
Where
Bachelor
Can We
Machine.
Find It?
It's actually in my new collection, plug.
The
Hard
Future
Drive,
of Sex?
The best sci-fi erotica of M. Christian. It's a collection of erotic science fiction stories I did. But it is an interesting question. I mean, if these things become a certain degree of self-awareness, maybe they'll develop desires as well. I mean, there's all kinds of things, you know, when we reach a point where they get to be so sophisticated, we have to worry about consent, we have to worry about murder, we have to worry about, you know, funerals, but then we also have to decide, you know, what if they start to develop their own desires? I mean, we create them to be passionate, we create them to be sexually, you know, interesting, and what happens when we lose interest? I mean, they do have a right for their own sexual pleasure? I mean, it's all kinds of things. And then what kind of sexual pleasure would a artificial life form have? I mean, if you want to make it kinky, I mean, you know, we could have artificial life forms who like edge play where they get deleted and then rebooted. I mean, who knows? That's what makes the stuff so fascinating.
Wow. Well, I think that my mind is blown at this point. I have never thought about that before, and it's so interesting. Great speculation. I'll definitely be reading that story. let's see. So, gosh, what else? What else do we want to throw into the mix here?
Well, I think you definitely should talk about our next subject, which is something I know you are really very well acquainted with. I think it actually kind of connects to what we're talking about here in a kind of tangential way.
Oh, well, let's see. I'm not sure. I think I originally thought we would make objectum sexuality our next topic, but I decided to go for next week. We are going to talk about, you're right. We are talking about objectum sexuality. My bad. I thought I was flipping it over to erotic hypnosis, but now I see that I haven't. Yes, objectum sexuality will be our topic next week. There's been some really interesting research that's come out, which we'll talk about then. And if you don't know already, listeners, objectum sexuality refers to people who have full-blown romantic, affectionate, and often sexual relationships with objects. And this is partner sex to those folks who are objectum sexuals. And we'll tell you more about that next week when we meet again on February 29th, same time, same station. And let's see. And we've got some other things coming up. Do you want to mention a couple of the other topics, Chris?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and start, and I'll pull up my list here.
Okay. Well, I think following objectum sexuality, we've got BDSM, emotional and physical safety. Then
exactly.
We've got
then
erotic.
We're talking about doing erotic and sexual hypnosis.
Right. And then we're going to get into sex and aging later in March.
And then after that, we're doing sex kinks and interests that deserve more attention. That's why I think it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, all are going to be fun.
Right. Let's see. Let's stop at April 11th because some things are a little more speculative past that point. But I do want to devote a segment to pelvic organ prolapse, which probably is not nearly as juicy a topic as sex robots, but honestly, it's a very important one. And then April 11th, why don't you take that one, Chris, and mention what that one is.
I just closed my window.
Oh, okay. It's erotic entertainment. It's erotic entertainment. So we've got
well,
a lot coming up.
Sorry about that.
And believe me, listeners, between the two of us, we are not going to lack for topics. We really aren't. We hope later on in the series to be able to take callers, you know, to phone in, say at the last 20 minutes of the show or so. We hope to have some interviews with some really cool guests. There's a lot that we're going to be getting into here in Love's Outer Limits. So at this point, we're about to end the show about 5 minutes early. Anything else, Chris? You want to give a plug for any of your social media here?
Well, I think we touched on so much stuff. It's really fascinating. I do want to encourage people to check out futuresex.net, but also just, you know, think about what you'd like to see and share that information with us. And I have to say, this is absolutely delightful. Dr. Amy has been fantastic. I hope you've had a great time. I look forward to this completely and can't wait to see what we talk about and get into next time. I mean, this is just such a delight.
It's such a delight for me, too. It absolutely is. Okay, well, we will see you all next week, and we'll have a little bit of a musical interlude, and then we'll be signing off. So thanks for being here, and if you listen to us in the archives, that's great, too. You don't have to be with us live, though we would kind of like that. All right, so see you later, Chris, and see you later, listeners. And this is Love's Outer Limits.